Hi, everybody, and welcome to a Thursday edition of the 201st podcast. I'm Ryan Ballingy. Thanks for joining us today. You can get a hold of me on Twitter at Ryan Ballingy. Find all my work at golfnewsnet.com. We got two stories for you today, and we kick off with a renovation coming to Jack Nicklaus's Muirfield Village Golf Club. This news came out yesterday. It first surfaced from No Laying Up on their Twitter feed. They tweeted that they had been told, that members had been told the day prior, that the club would be starting a full, complete golf course renovation in July 2020. So July 4th, 2020 to be specific, which seems like a weird date to start a renovation, especially since that's Independence Day and stuff's probably going on there at the club. I mean, it was a private country club. But nonetheless, so that was what No Laying Up had shared. And then kind of over the course of the day, some of the reporting changed or was updated. So Tim Rosefort from Golf Channel put out a report saying he had learned that this would be the final renovation under Nicklaus's eye. He owns the club. It is his thing. I mean, he opened in 1974, and he's done a number of renovations and updates to the golf course over the years, over the 45 years he's been the owner and operator. But this is going to be kind of the last go-round. This is going to be his last big renovation project before he kind of calls it. He's 79, getting up there in years, probably doesn't have a whole lot of interest in tinkering with his golf course again and again and again, you know, in his 80s. So he wants to kind of use this as an opportunity to write his course or get it ready for where it needs to be for the future moving forward. And then Sean Zach from golf.com said he spoke to the general manager of Muirfield Village Golf Club, who said that the renovation project is effectively resurfacing, redoing all of the green complexes, all 18 of them, and then some other minor tweaks to the property. So it's not a complete renovation. They basically would have a year to do it anyway, from July 4th, which would just be about a month after the PGA Tour event that's there every year is done. That's about enough time to break everything down, get all of the grandstands and all of the infrastructure from having the tournament broken down, have that put away, and then you can have your Independence Day celebration for your members, whatever that is they do there, and then you can begin this one. It sounds like it's going to be a one-year renovation project. Now, we don't know when it's going to open back up, but we would presume that it opens back up for the PGA Tour next year, or the following year, I should say, in 2021 for the Memorial Tournament. So it's an interesting project. It's interesting timing for the project, given Nicklaus's age, of course. He mentioned, you know, he's borderline 80. He doesn't do tons and tons of work anymore. And a lot of the stuff that Nicklaus Design does is kind of by his team. You know, Jay Blasi does a great job. He was kind of the lead man on the Fairy Point project in New York. He did a lot of that work. I mean, he does kind of a lot of the stuff for the Nicklaus firm these days. And I'm sure Nicklaus has input and does stuff, but the idea of signature golf courses from Jack Nicklaus is not done, but it's not. I mean, first of all, the jobs aren't there. There just aren't that many golf course architecture jobs these days. And second, I mean, it's just kind of those kind of days are kind of coming to a close where Jack's designing courses. And besides, if you kind of look at who's getting the high-profile jobs these days, Jack Nicklaus is not one of those guys. Neither really is Gary Player, although he's doing some design work. Arnold Palmer's firm really no longer exists in an architectural capacity. And the jobs are really going to guys like Gil Hance and Cora Crenshaw and Tom Doak. And you think about those kind of leading names, and then you start to get into David McClay Kidd and Mike DeVries, and you can kind of go down the line into some younger guys as well, Keith Reb, a number of guys who are kind of in the earlier stages of their careers, but you look at the guys at King Collins. I mean, they're starting to do some new golf course development, a couple ongoing right now. So those are the hot names, not necessarily Nicklaus Design. So he's got the time, the capacity to focus on this job, getting this right one last time, and then that's kind of going to be where he leaves it. And like I said earlier, Nicholas opened this golf course in 74, and he has tweaked with it for the better part of a half century. And he's made changes to the course over the years. The last two changes were substantive, and they were toward the finish. So in 2002, I believe it was, Nicholas altered the 17th hole, made it longer, made it about 485 yards, made the landing area more difficult and challenging, created some bunkering to challenge the players. Players are long enough now, truthfully, that they can just blast it over all of that, but he also made the green complex more difficult to putt and the surrounds more penalizing if you miss the green, changed the bunkering around there, tried to make the hole a little bit more difficult. And then in 2011, he completely gutted the 16th hole. It was a par 3. It still is a par 3, but replaced it with a new hole, in essence. Put a greenside water complex, greenside water hazard. Put a new green complex up. Put some mounding up for spectator visibility during the tournament, during the Memorial Tournament, and also for the 2013 President's Cup that was there. And that was poorly received the first year at Memorial because the green was so firm. But after that, it's been fine. In 2012, Tiger's chip in there was one of the sounds I will never forget about golf. I mean, just the uproar in celebration of that unlikely birdie was insane. I was there with actually Stephanie Way at the time. We had started walking towards 17, almost all of us expecting there's no way anything good was coming from what Tiger had done to go a little deep. And then just kind of turned around and you saw him chip, and then you saw people could just go nuts. And the decibel of that reaction, something I'll never forget. But we're kind of getting off of the topic of the design of the golf course. And so it'll be interesting to see what kind of changes they make. Over the years, Nicholas has lengthened this course, you know, some 400 yards. It's almost 7,400 yards now. I don't know if they'll add any extra length to it. I don't know how much they have on the property to be able to do that. Maybe you get it to 75. I don't know. But this is going to be a golf course that's going to host the PGA Tour pretty much in perpetuity. I don't see a reason for this event or the Arnold Palmer Invitational. Again, Bay Hill in his family of ownership. I don't see a reason for those to go away, and those places so closely identify with that person, be it Bay Hill with Mr. Palmer or Muirfield Village with Mr. Nicholas, that they're not going to suddenly throw that away. So the work that's being done to Muirfield is going to be representative probably for the foreseeable future. I mean, barring some huge changes in equipment rules, this is going to kind of be what it's got to be. So it'll be interesting to see what Nicholas's vision is to redo the green complexes and how that will be able to challenge the modern player. But he also has to probably be thinking, I have to think about players 20 years from now. The other interesting piece of this is that the renovation is coming at just a couple of days after Scioto Country Club, where Jack Nicklaus grew up playing golf, also in the Columbus area, has announced a restoration project. So they're working with a guy named Andrew Green, who is an En Vogue all of a sudden because Keith Foster is a criminal. He is an En Vogue restoration artist. So he's doing the work that basically has taken over Foster's portfolio. He's doing the work at Congressional Country Club. That's going to be a multi-year effort to redo the blue course there and restore that. And he's going to take on this job, which starts in 2021. June 2021 is going to take a full year. And they're going to take a lot of the Ross features, the Donald Ross design, that have been lost to time or been changed over the years. Some folks at the club were unhappy with how the U.S. Senior Open was handled. They brought in, I believe, Reese Jones to do some work. And it didn't turn out very well, at least in terms of in the eyes of the membership. And they want to see it more look like a Ross course, the Ross course that it was. And restorations are in vogue right now. And so you got an opportunity to do that. So two of the best clubs, if not the two best clubs in the Columbus area, are concurrently announcing they're going to be doing some serious work to their golf courses. And obviously the membership is really what's to benefit from both of those things. But and who knows if they're related. I assume that this has been in the works for both clubs for years. I mean, there's a master plan at Scioto. Jack Nicklaus has probably been thinking about this for a while. It just so happens to be interesting that they were announced at effectively the same time. All right, we'll go ahead and take a quick break here. I want to tell you about our friends at ShotScope. We've been working with them this year. I've been using their product when I play golf. It is a golf performance tracking system that comes with sensors. You screw in the butt end of the grips of your clubs, and you link those up with your GPS unit that comes with you, that comes with the package. You put it on your wrist as a watch. You can use it as a GPS watch while you play, or you can turn it off in tournament competition, depending on how you choose to track. No matter what happens when you pull a club, you then swing the club, hit the shot. It marks using the onboard GPS on that watch where you are, marks it on the course, maps it, and then spits data back out to you when you're done playing. It gives you real strokes gained. It gives you the idea of how far you actually hit your clubs during a round, your tendencies, and other things you can learn about your game to get better as a golfer. That way you can formulate a plan about what you need to get better at and address it. And that ultimately leads to better practice, and it leads to better golf. So if you head over to ShotScope.com, you can find out more about the platform. It's $200 to get involved and work with ShotScope. And the best thing I like about ShotScope is that there is no annual platform fee. You are not paying every year to continue to receive and analyze your data, unlike with some other platforms out there. So head over to ShotScope.com, check them out, and start shopping for that holiday shopping season, the people in your life that maybe need a special gift this holiday season, because we're not that far away. Actually, we're inside 3 months to Christmas, and we are not that far away from a new year. So if you're thinking about starting to get a quick beat on that holiday shopping, head over to ShotScope.com, check it out, maybe even gift yourself something. Okay, the second story today probably should have been the first story, but it doesn't really matter the order. The big story in the world of golf right now, given that this is a pretty low-key week and will continue to be, but the big story was from Costco and their refunding of customers for their purchase of the most recent iteration of their four-piece golf ball. So if you're not familiar, Costco is a membership club. They make all kinds of crap, lots of oversized things, big portions of things. You know, you stock up on a tub of mayo or an extra big set of towels or a ton of socks, all that kinds of stuff. And I love Costco. They're great. But they, in fall 2016, they put out a series of golf ball, or one model of golf ball, a four-piece urethane cover golf ball. And it was literally called that. Like, it didn't have a fancy name. It was called the Kirkland Signature four-piece urethane golf ball. And My Golf Spy found out about it. They started to promote it. They ran a ball test that suggested that ball was equal in performance to a Titleist Pro V1. And because Costco was selling the balls at effectively $30 for two dozen, so $15 a dozen, those things just flew off the shelves right away, and it became a cult favorite. And they would restock the ball, and they would sell out immediately, and then they would do it again and again. And eventually, in 2018, they came back to market with another model of the four-piece ball and a new three-piece ball that had not been available previously. And as part of that, the formulation, the design that the ball had for the four-piece ball changed, because Costco can no longer use the same original plant for this run of golf ball. So they used a company called Nassau, which is a popular golf ball manufacturer overseas in China and Taiwan. And then they had to use a company called SM Global, which is a Korea-based company but has facilities in Asia. And they used a different design on the ball. So the ball was softer. It had a dimple pattern that was completely different. And it frankly was a lower quality ball. But people still bought them up. People are still happy with the four-piece ball and the three-piece ball. And so there was another run done for the fall 2019 season. And they announced it in August, and they sold out very quickly. And people got the balls and were complaining about them on social media, particularly in Reddit forums and Reddit areas, subreddits. And it was just kind of a nightmare for Costco, because people were posting pictures of the covers of the ball cutting very easily after a very low number of shots, poor durability, poor performance. They're lighting up Costco on Golf Reddit and probably Costco Reddit, and the reviews were bad on the Costco website. Right now, it looks like it's under 2 stars for a review of the ball, and My Golf Spy kind of dug into it and found some problems on their own in testing it, and it just was all around bad. So the end result was Costco reached out to every customer who purchased the ball online, and they refunded their money. No questions asked, included shipping. They don't have to bring the product back. They're just giving them their money back with an apology that this particular product did not meet their standard. Now, where does that leave Costco? Obviously, Costco isn't stopping selling balls. They still sell the three-piece ball. It's available on their website. You can buy it. Plenty of people like it. And it's still at a crazy good price of like $14 a dozen. If you look at the four-piece ball, they're a little bit more expensive. But now the reality is people will know that this formulation of golf ball is not the original. It's not as good. It's not as well made. At least that's now the reputation. And even if Costco, doing the right thing, has stepped out in front of this, there has to be a lingering question for golf ball purchasers who took the leap on a Kirkland signature ball, that maybe they're not getting something all that valuable, or they're getting something as valuable as what they're paying for. They're not getting a $50 a dozen ball for $15 a dozen. We don't know where that goes from here. There is the possibility, of course, that Costco continues to make this ball. They work with their plant in question. They fix some whatever the issues were with the cover. And they go from there and try to sell them again. Or maybe they decided to scrap the four-piece ball for a while. We just sell the three-piece ball for a while. See how that goes. I really don't know where they're going to go with this. But I think this whole thing exposes a reality that golfers need to acknowledge. If you're a fan of these kind of direct-to-consumer balls, or in this case, I mean, this is a direct-to-consumer ball, but it's through Costco. Or if you look at like a Cut Golf or a Vice Golf or any of 16 different brands, supposed brands that sell different balls with different colors and names, they are all really effectively the same balls. They're the same white label balls from the same manufacturers in Asia who promise to supply you, if you want to start a golf ball brand, with a menu of golf balls, designs you can work from, and then you slap your logo on it, you give it a name, you do the boxing and branding, and then all of a sudden you're selling golf balls, even though really they're all the same golf balls. So the original Costco ball is still sold by the company that makes it, Nassau, and there's another company called Pearl Golf. They sell it as a ball known as the Pearl Pro X. So if you still want to buy the original Costco ball, you can find that. It's available. It's just not available with the Costco logo on it, but it's the same ball, same formula, same design. And if you work with, if you're a purchaser from other companies that are direct to consumer that don't have R&D, they don't have research and development, they aren't designing balls, they're just purchasing off of a menu and slapping their logo on it, I think this has to make you think twice for a couple of different reasons. One, all the balls are fundamentally in the same family. They're all about the same. So you could just kind of throw a dart at a direct to consumer brand, purchase their supposed best ball, and you're probably going to get about the same one as everybody else. Two, the manufacturing may not be up to snuff because there are only so many golf ball plants around. Now, the major manufacturers, Srixon and Bridgestone, well, Srixon's overseas, but Bridgestone and TaylorMade and Callaway and Titleist/Acushnet, they have facilities in the United States, but they can't run everything through them. So they ship some stuff off to Asia. They use some of these factories with their own formulations, their own instructions, their own QC, and they go over and take care of their business with the runs. But that means they're taking up time from these direct-to-consumer brands, and they're taking up time to produce golf balls from the likes of Costco, who is ultimately selling the ball for super cheap and almost no profit margin. So if you're one of those manufacturers, those big manufacturers who's working with these golf ball plants, and you see all of these guys trying to make someone else's design and then slap their logo on it, you can choose to apply pressure and you can say to those factories, well, we don't want your business. We don't want to run our business through you if you're going to work with these guys. You know, stop working with them. And the only reasonable response for some of these bigger manufacturing plants is we've got to work with the people who give us the biggest orders. We're going to work with you. And that's why you kind of run into issues with like a Cut Golf or a Vice Golf, where all of a sudden they go, oh, we're out of balls. You know, we've sold out of them. And they're not lying to you. They have sold out of balls, which, hey, that's good for them. But it's not because they sell them so quickly. It's because they've sold out of what they could purchase and the time, manufacturing time that they had afforded to them. And then they have to wait for another run, and then they can package and sell more golf balls. That's also the reason why if you purchase through Vice, for example, and you buy a zillion dozen, the price goes down substantially because their shipping cost goes down substantially from Germany. So you get that similar deal with a Cut Golf or other companies that if you buy in bulk, they sweeten the deal because they're going to save on the shipping cost. So they're going to pass that along to you. And that's nice. I appreciate that. But they also have no quality control. They have, or no permanent quality control. They have no R&D. And that may not matter to you. That may not matter to you that they don't use their own design. But I think you as a consumer should know that if you're buying a golf ball that's sold by four different brands, it doesn't matter what logo is on the ball. It matters what's inside and the design of the whole package. So why not just pick the one that's got the lowest price? Doesn't really matter. And I think that's really where this goes next, is trying to expose some of these direct-to-consumer brands to people. This is what they are. This is what they're doing. And this is what they're offering. And if you want a cheaper golf ball, that's okay. I understand. Paying $55 or $60 a dozen for a tour caliber golf ball is a big ask for a lot of people playing golf in this country. I have no problem with people trying to save money on that regard, even if you're willing to spend $550 on a new driver, or you're willing to spend $2,000 on a set of irons and you're trying to save money there. Okay, that's a little strange compromise, but we can live with that. But then I would urge you, if you're looking in this direct-to-consumer space, to look at companies that have real research and development, that do real design work, and have at least a higher modicum of control over quality, and they do a lot more work on their end to make sure you're getting a good quality product. So I would look to a Snell Golf. I've always had good interactions with them. Their product has always been good for me. Even the MTB Red Ball, which was not as well received for variety of reasons. It worked great for me, but it did not work as well for some people. They scrapped that within a year, and they put out a new ball that then won the distance test from my golf spy. If you look at Encore Golf, they had that hollow metal core ball, which I believe they still sell, but they've come out with other balls since. The Avant, which is a solid ball, and they're trying to come out with a smart ball. We'll see where that goes. They're kind of getting distracted on building some kind of Top Golf look-alike in Buffalo, where they're based. But still, they're doing the work. They're raising the money to do the R&D and all that stuff that needs to come with it by being a serious manufacturer. So if you're going to look to be a direct-to-consumer purchaser and save some money that way, go to those two brands. Go to them in particular. I have no advertising relationship with either of them. I'm telling you this as a user of those balls. They do the job. They are tour caliber. And I believe from both, I know from Snell, you can get a sizable discount if you buy multiple dozen. So if you buy like six dozen, I think it is, from Snell, you get about a 20% discount per dozen, which is no joke. I mean, you're looking at $35 a dozen as it was. Now you're looking at like 30. That's a really good deal. Really, really good deal. And if you even want to save further money, you can get their two-piece ball, which is, I believe, $20 a dozen, which, again, not the best performing ball, but if you want a cheaper ball and you feel like you can't tell the difference, so you're going to save money there, go to them. Go to those two companies and help them out, because they're doing the right things to grow, and they deserve your business. All right, that's going to do it for us today on the show. Thank you for checking us out. Again, if you listen to us through Apple Podcasts, please give us a 5-star review. It helps us reach more people. We will have some news, hopefully from the Safeway Open first round for you tomorrow as well. All the action from the Alfred Dunhill Links Championship, which is the main event of the week. The 3-course rotation from the Old Course to Kings Barns to Carnoustie. It's the European Tour equivalent of the AT&T Pro-Am out at Pebble Beach. It's one of the best events of the year. Should enjoy it. Get up early. Check it out on Golf Channel if you have the chance. If not, check it out this weekend. And enjoy a little bit of coffee in the morning or whatever it is you drink in the morning before you get into football and other stuff on the weekend and sit back and relax and enjoy some Link style golf. And then in prime time, you've got the Silverado Resort, which is a pretty fun little course, good little tournament, solid field. I think about half the top 50 is there, 20 of the top 50 is there. It should be basically the best event in the United States the rest of this year in terms of men's golf. And it should be some good coverage. So check that out as well. But until we get to tomorrow, happy Thursday. Enjoy the rest of your day. And we will see you on Friday for another edition of Two Off the First.